All right, Nick Ashew on the Fan, Matt Nick Ashew on Twitter, all the socials, all the various things there. Quiet time now for the Commanders. It's nice, right? You got after the draft, there's everybody chance to breathe a little bit. I'm not a big fan of draft grades. I know they're everywhere, and I know there's like NFL Network does a whole show on it, and I get it, but like we all know we know nothing. Really, like let's be honest with ourselves. We know nothing right now about what this draft is going to look like. You got to give it a couple of years. Sometimes you draft players, take a couple of years even to develop. Now, it depends on who that player is, what position they play, where they were drafted, a lot of those things where you can have those longer expectations. I get it. The pressure is a lot higher on somebody like a quarterback or any first-round pick versus a guy that you took on day three. It's just, that's how it works. But it doesn't also mean you need to rush guys out right away. Ask Anthony Richardson and how that's working out with the Colts. Guy should not have been starting right away, should also not have been drafted as high as he was. He's just too raw, didn't have enough experience, but, you know, it is what it is. But look, I went on record with it. I've begged and prayed to the football gods that Sonny Styles would fall to the Commanders at 7, and really didn't think it was going to happen. I didn't think he'd get past the Giants at 5. I thought maybe there'd be some luck that David Bailey was at least there. Somebody defense-oriented for the Commanders was just so important for them at 7, and it wasn't just me that was surprised that Sonny Styles fell to 7 for the Commanders. Daniel Jeremiah felt the same way.
Sonny Styles, to me, I did not think. I know it's off-the-ball linebacker and value all that jazz, but I did not think he'd be there for Washington at 7. When I talked to Adam Peters in the run-up the process, he was glowing in his praise, but I didn't even give much thought to it because I was like, he's not going to be there, dude. You're not getting him. But I thought we put him and Reese in that division. I think both those guys are good fits for the type of quarterbacks you're going to play in the NFC East.
Yeah, look, Daniel Jeremiah is one of the best draft experts we have out there. This is his thing, and you know, a lot of people certainly surprised, including him, that Sonny Styles was there at 7 for the Commanders, and you know that was the type of player that they needed. Look, I know not one guy that you draft is going to change this defense totally, but that attitude of just like, well, you should have drafted, you know, I'd be really curious to see, and I know we're never going to know. It's an alternate reality that we'll have to figure out. Maybe AI can tell us. Let me ask ChatGPT or Claude real quick here what they think. What would have happened if Jeremiah Love or Carnell Tate were available at 7? Again, I know they loved those guys, specifically Carnell Tate. I know that was somebody that was certainly on their list, the very top of their draft board, but you know, they didn't get tempted to draft those guys, their top two rated offensive players at 7, so you get somebody like Sonny Styles. And yeah, he's not going to change the defense all by himself, but he's going to make a massive difference. Like, I hate that attitude. I saw that a lot. People tweet me, be like, why do you want a defensive guy? Not one guy is going to change the defense. Yeah, but you got to start somewhere, right? Like, if you have that attitude, it's like, well, why save a little bit of money here? It's not all going to add. It all adds up, all right? Like,
he's going to be the quarterback of our defense.
Yes, like, and that's the whole point. Like, dude, he's a guy that's going to go out there and play multiple positions for you. He is a fundamentally sound player, massively athletic, really high football IQ, going to be the green dot linebacker for you, and somebody that when you add that to the other moves they've made this offseason defensively, that stuff adds up. And I just never understood this idea of just like, well, you know, draft the fun running back. And again, we're not going to know whether they would have even done that or not. It's lying season, and there's a lot of stuff that gets thrown around. And if I'm the Commanders, you absolutely keep everybody guessing. They approached the draft in terms of the narrative, the conversation, where they were maybe going, muddying the waters. They did it perfectly because nobody knew. And in the end, the draft fell the way it fell, and you go with what you can do. But, I mean, Sonny Styles has the potential to be, I mean, a defense-altering player. And yes, it's not going to be just him, but the fact that they need so many different things to go right for them defensively with the talent they have, with the growth that's there, with all of the positions of need, to have somebody that can do multiple things added to that at a really high level matters. And look, we knew they wanted to get more athletic. I'd say get younger, but the draft, you're automatically getting younger. But they did the same thing in free agency. There's a lot of high upside defensive players on this Commanders roster. And that's what's so important is Leo Chenault is only 25, 44 starts already, won a Super Bowl with the Chiefs, could exceed that contract. Adafe Owe, if we get Adafe Owe, Chargers Adafe Owe, not Ravens Adafe Owe, you're going to live up to that $68 million guaranteed and $100 million contract. I get it. It might have felt like it was a little bit of a reach to some people. But if they see something in him and he exceeds those expectations, then you're there. Nick Cross, another one. Like these are, and there's other players, obviously, they went with. Tim Settle, bringing him back is great to solidify the defensive line a little bit more. He's not necessarily going to be a game changer. But again, there's different degrees of expectations and roles for these players. But somebody like a Sonny Styles, I know it's maybe not as flashy. We'd love to see the flashy running back there. But it's not going to make this team. Jeremiah Love might be somebody that you get 4 years out of, three, you know, maybe five if you're lucky on that, you know, the team option for the fifth year and all that, and that's what you get. Sonny Styles could be a guy that's doing this for a decade for this team. I get it. This is all questions. It's why I hate the draft grades. It's stupid. I know we do it. We fall into the trap. It's like yesterday and this whole week. I mean, talking about Jordan and LeBron, I don't want to fall into the trap, and yet I still do it. We all do it, right? We all see it. We're not going to know until we actually see what happens out there on the field. And it also is what happens later in this draft. What does, you know, somebody like an Antonio Williams bring to the table for this team? What if he exceeds his draft position? Because it's even hard to say expectations, right? It's hard to say exceeds expectations because expectations are, we create them, honestly, or the coaching staff might have them too. They have their own level. But realistically, for anybody drafted, the expectations are just, this is what you think he could be. Well, okay, I mean, they're artificial in a lot of ways, but Dan Quinn had a lot to say about the rest of this draft, even beyond just Sonny Styles.
Yeah, so there's another guy that we had here up to Virginia and D.C. to visit with, and a wide receiver with elite quickness inside and out of breaks. He was an excellent route runner, and we thought he could play both outside and inside in the slot. So, man, we're pumped to add him to the crew. Josh Joseph's an edge rusher. Man, does he have width, get off. I think he's got real pass rush to him. So Adam and I, we felt, man, this guy in the fifth round, what a cool guy to try to develop and see where he can take it. Catron Allen in the Penn State record books as the all-time leading rusher at Penn State, I think that speaks to a lot. But when you watch the tape, we're going to run a lot of zone. Man, he can put his foot in the ground. He's physical. He's got good size. We're excited that Catron being a part of it. An interior player, Matt Goldman, we're going to put him at center. Played at Wake and both at Michigan State. We thought he was tough. He could, like, you know, play these interior guys with good strength, get moving off the line of scrimmage. We're excited about him. And then from a quarterback spot, adding Ethan to this group into the four with Sam and battling up for the third spot. Another good competitive guy, man.
Again, Dan Quinn and the Commanders had needs, and they checked as many boxes as they could with the picks they had. Would I have liked to have seen them maybe trade back in some way and add an extra pick or two? Yeah, but you also have to look at what's available, who's available, what that looks like, because, you know, before Josh Josephs was drafted, who, by the way, in the fifth round, an edge rusher with a ton of athleticism and long arms, literally the opposite of Reuben Bain, he's got a huge wingspan. I mean, it's like Victor Wembanyama-type wingspan. Okay, maybe not that much, but it's close to it, right? But he's a little bit raw. But his sack numbers went down from 2 years ago to last year. But, you know, you look at somebody like that, and if you can develop that talent, and Joshua Joseph's become somebody that's a more consistent edge rusher for them. I'm not talking Pro Bowl edge rusher, but somebody that goes out there, disrupts the quarterback, takes advantage of the snaps that he has, takes advantage of the opportunities that he has, and the arrow points up. That's an extra bonus right there. They added another edge rusher that they see potential in, and they needed a receiver. They got Antonio Williams in the third round. They needed a center. We all know that, and you've addressed the center position. And look, I'd even argue Catron Allen. I can't tell you how many times you tweeted me or called in and said, look, like, we need a back that's actually going to be a pound-the-rock back. They got that in Catron Allen. Somebody that you get value in the sixth round of the draft, a running back, that's a big deal. And I don't know. Look, the running back room is not going to finish with Rashad White, Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt, Catron Allen, Jeremy McNichols, and Jerome Ford. It's not going to be all of those guys. I think they even added, Robert Henry, the running back, or the undrafted running back. They're not going to keep all those guys. Some of it's for training camp. So you probably keep, three? So the question is, what does that look like? If Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt looks great and is a dual threat out of the backfield, you might not keep Rashad White. Sorry, Jaden, you might not have your college teammate there. I mean, that may be what it looks like, where it's Catron Allen, it's Bill, and it's Jeremy McNichols. Because, look, Jeremy McNichols adds value to this roster, right? I mean, he does. He's somebody, you know, you can go. He's going to throw you big blocks when you need it. He can go out there as a receiver as well. He's just kind of one of those, you know, you don't really use the term in the NFL, but he's a role player. You need those in the NBA. you need those in football, too, guys that understand what their role is. The Commanders brought in a lot of different guys in that backfield, and you're just going to kind of figure out who works. But Catron Allen, there's great value in the sixth round, especially the success that he had at Penn State. I think we're going to look at him, and he's going to be one of the fan favorites. There's always a preseason hero, and I know we're months away from that, but Catron Allen might end up being one of the preseason heroes for the Commanders. And it's not like they haven't drafted running backs late before that have had success. I mean, Alfred Morris is an extreme example, but you got some years out of Alfred Morris. And that's, again, one example. But so this is a draft where when you look at it, yeah, we can't give grades in terms of like how the players are like the talent level of the players, because we don't know what the individual player is going to look like, whoever it is, going from college to the NFL. Fine. But here's where I am okay with draft grades. Did you check the boxes of the needs you had, or did you leave things on the table? Now, there's obviously the secondary was not addressed in the draft, but I would at least say this about the whether it's safety or it's, you know, corner for the Commanders. There's upside. Okay, so let's look at it as just that. There's upside. Nick Cross, Trey Amos healthy. I think there's a chance that he could certainly grow. Mikey Sanders still playing on the outside, going to be a better spot for them. I mean, Emmick Robertson, he's going to be more of a veteran. That's, you know, he's somebody that's going to fill a need for them. Maybe Akella Witherspoon stays healthy and exceeds some expectations there. Again, I know the secondary still has questions, but there's a chance that what you already have on the roster could be good enough. And I know that's not a way to build a roster, but again, they only had so many, you know, only so many things they could do in free agency, only so many draft picks. So you're not going to necessarily address every single position. But they checked most of the boxes with six draft picks. And I wouldn't be surprised if at some point they find a way to add more picks to next year's draft, which, get ready. You think the NBA right now has got a lot of hype around the draft class that's coming in this year in June? Wait till you hear what happens with next year's NFL draft. They're already talking about it, 2027, which happens to be in D.C. How great is that going to be, by the way? That we're going to have the NFL draft on the National Mall, and it's going to be one of the most hyped drafts, at least as of now, in the NFL that we've had in a while. Now, the quarterbacks have to develop in college, because if you remember, there was a lot of hype around the quarterbacks heading into this class, too, for a while. And that fell off very quickly. I mean, it went the polar opposite. But some of those guys, Dante Moore going back, I mean, next year could be a top five pick. And, you know, you start going down that list, and okay, it might look a little bit better. But yeah, we're going to have one of the most hyped drafts in a while in the NFL right here in D.C. on the National Mall. It's going to be, the renderings of that do look really cool. I mean, it's cool. We got that F1 race coming up in this summer. D.C.'s got some cool events. I mean, it's, you know, I know it's probably a little bit different setting them up. I don't do events, but I can imagine the security is a lot more. But we're starting to see more of this stuff. So, yeah, if you're the Commanders, now it's all about that player development, though. Again, you can draft all the guys you want, or you can have fewer picks. But if you get the most out of those picks, the most juice you can squeeze out of these guys, it's not a bad situation to be in. And that's kind of what we're looking at with them now is Antonio Williams by week five. I mean, what if? Let's just say, right? Like, wide receivers can step in and play well right away. They can contribute right away. There is the upside to this. There is the what if Antonio Williams looks better than what people expected or does more than what people expected, solidifies himself as that number two receiver. Could. I know he's going to be slot a lot of times. He's going to play on the outside, too. And I know he's not like 6'4", but Chick Okonkwo can be your red zone target, that big body you throw the ball up to. Don't rule him out. I think he's going to have a great season in this offense. I think we are going to watch Chick Okonkwo explode in this Commanders offense because they've needed that for a while. You've added an athleticism there. There's a Deebo Samuel-esque to his game a little bit where it's like, you know, runs with a low center of gravity. He's bigger than Deebo, but, you know, he's going to run. He's a physical runner, willing to take some hits. I think Chig Okonkwo is going to be somebody where if you look at this team and go, you know what, we'd like another big receiver maybe down the road, but having all these deep threats, having these guys that can stretch the field, you know, Van Jefferson, as long as he makes the roster, I think there's a good chance he does. I mean, they brought him in for a reason, but not everybody's going to. De'Ami Brown, like some of these other guys, a healthier Luke McCaffrey, I think could take the next step. Who knows, maybe even Ja'Cory Brooks. Maybe we get more out of Ja'Cory Brooks. I mean, this is the type of thing where sometimes players take a jump from year one to year two or year two to year three, where all of a sudden you're looking on the roster going, we didn't need Brandon Ayuk. We didn't have to go that route. We already got enough talent on this roster receiver, and it maybe exceeds those expectations. So, yeah, it all comes down to now, whatever those draft draft grades are. Good, if I could speak, that would be nice. Whatever they are, you really need a couple of years to truly go back and look at a draft class and see where it is. That's why you see all the, like, redrafting the draft class of 2023, and you get an opportunity to see what it looks like now. God, if we had a time machine, be like biffing Back to the Future, bet on all the games and just run a front office for the Commanders, and I'd just draft all the perfect players for you. I would do it for you, the fan. Nick Cashew on the fan. Nick Cashew on the fan, 800-636-1067. I'm at Nick Cashew on all the socials. You heard from Dan Quinn, kind of looking at the rest of the draft beyond Sonny Styles. And listen, even Daniel Jeremiah surprised that Sonny Styles was there at 7. I think most of us were, you know, now that the dust is kind of settled here. Again, I will say it, I hate draft grades, but you can still look at what you get, the value of a pick. You know, it's a little bit easier to look at a first-round pick versus a sixth-round pick, but, you know, Katron Allen late in the draft could bring a lot of value to this team. That was something they needed, and that's how you can judge whether it was a good draft or, you know, a not-so-good draft initially, right? Is did a team address needs? And, you know, when Josh Josephs was drafted, their fifth-round edge rusher, there were a couple of centers that went off the board at 144 and 146, and they were drafted at 147, so it's like maybe they were thinking center and they had to pivot, but they addressed another need. And you can listen, you can never have enough edge rushers, seriously. I mean, like, yes, roster-wise, you only have so many spots, and you got to kind of figure out what that balance looks like, but for this team specifically, man, you can never have enough edge rushers. You got to find some guys, and you could develop talent. It's like not like Max Crosby was a first-round pick, or it's the first one that came to my mind. I know there's other ones. Myles Garrett was the opposite, number one overall pick, but you got the idea, right? You can find players that can develop in later rounds, and when you see the physical gifts and the athleticism and the wingspan, which is great for an edge rusher, Joseph's got something like that. So, you know, there are different players across different positions that are going to have a level of value that's still to this team, and not everything's going to be about finding a star. Like, we're always looking for that, right? He's going to be the next great edge rusher. He might just be good, or he might just be solid. Katron Allen could be he might just be a good back that gets you the tough yards when you need it. You need that on a roster, too. Like, we glorify role players in the NBA, but we don't necessarily do that as much in the NFL. You need guys that can fill certain roles, too. We just don't use the phrase role player as much. But in reality, they have a need, too. You need a guy that's, you know, a third down back, or you need a receiver that, you know, is whether it's a receiver or tight end, that's a big body that you can count on that is going to get you, you know, a big catch in the red zone or whatever. Sometimes it's just one or two specific needs. I get it. Some positions are specialized. You still need a guy that can kick field goals and punt and things. I mean, punter is settled. We know the punter's good. They didn't have to draft a punter. Let's go to Mitch in New Jersey. What's up, Mitch? Good to hear from you, buddy.
How you doing, Nick?
Good,
we got the first two picks. Well, I've seen, I forgot the running back and the quarterback from Rutgers. I would have had the guy from Connecticut. He went undrafted. Joe Fagnano.
Mm-hmm.
That was, but there's one guy, and I think his name is Z Harris. He's like 6'8", 330, but he's got a bit of a police criminal history. Seemed like his last 2-3 years in college, he's doing some sort of trouble here, especially hitting women. I guess guys deserve a second chance. You think they might just throw him? I agree with the free agency we had. We did pretty well, and the kind of out of edge rushers, or defensive ends, as I like to call them.
All right, thanks, Mitch. I got to be honest. I don't know if it's my earpiece or it's his phone. Something was sounding a little bit scratchy for me, so I can only get kind of part of what he said about, you know, I heard a guy 6'8", 330. Sorry, Mitch. It might have been
with a criminal record.
Say that again?
With a criminal record, he was saying.
Yeah. I could only get some of mine. I don't know if it was something in my end there, but my audio sounded weird. But I know that there are some big guys. You know, the one thing that made me think about is we have players, too, that, you know, sometimes don't play a lot of football that teams will give a shot to and give them an opportunity. And, I mean, not everybody's Antonio Gates, but this is now the chance, too. Who knows who the Commanders have that comes into camp, that's in minicamp, that, you know, again, this whole offseason, we got a long way to go. It's the beginning of May, plenty of time. I know it goes by fast, but let's, you know, everybody always be like, oh, it's closing in. Oh, hold on, let's take some time here, evaluate some of the young guys before we get to camp. We got a long time here. No, but you sometimes bring in players that you want to take a flyer on. You want to take, you know, an opportunity to see if they can play a new position or whatever. I'll never forget, and I know it's so polarizing, but like when Tim Tebow came back, remember when he was in camp with the Jaguars, and that was, well, Urban Meyer was the coach, so we know how that worked out. But and they tried him at tight end when everybody had said he'd be a tight end for so long, never wanted to play tight end, and he was like, ah, screw it, baseball's not working. Let me come back and play tight end for a little bit. I remember it was like, he's taking away roster spots from other guys. Stop it. Everybody, I think when they were still the Redskins, that they had like, there was somebody that they had in camp that was, they were trying out at tight end or something that had never played tight end. I can't even remember who it was. But I mean, like, this happens all the time with teams where you bring in a player that you think might be able to play a position or was a great college basketball player that's an undrafted free agent. And you say, let's bring him into camp and let's see. If anybody remembers Jai Lewis from George Mason, as me as a Mason alum, I remember when they made that Final Four, Jai Lewis, 6'7", 260, whatever he was, he tried out for the Giants after that. He got an opportunity before he went overseas and I think played in Israel or Greece. I don't know where he played. Somewhere and played basketball overseas for a while. But you know, he came in, at least tried out with the Giants and realized, this isn't for me. I still want to play basketball for a while. Happens all the time where you give guys opportunities that play a different position or a different sport and you just take a flyer on them. Why not? There's always an opportunity to find somebody that turns in. I mean, it was Metal Chris, who was the receiver for the Patriots, you might remember. Played lacrosse and then ended up, had a few good years with them.
I have zero record on lacrosse. I've never paid much attention.
But he was a receiver for the Patriots for years. Like he was a solid wide receiver. Chris something. God, I can't remember what his name is now. It's completely slipping my mind. But anyway, I mean, he was a college lacrosse player. And then I think he might have played pro for a little
while. Google's telling me Chris Hogan.
There you go. Chris Hogan. Thank you. Chris Hogan. I mean, I don't think he's still in the NFL now, but he was with the Patriots for a while and was a solid contributor as a wide receiver for them. So there's all types of other ways that sometimes you find. And again, some of this is like just luck. Some of it is identifying the talent. Some of it's the football gods saying we bestow upon you blessings of success with these players where things actually work out well for the Commanders. I mean, he had it 2 years ago. So that's just why
he played in the NFL for like 10 years on like six teams.
Did Hogan play 10 years?
Yeah, it's in 2011 to 2021.
Wow, I didn't realize it was that long. So yeah, I mean, a lacrosse player too.
I mean, he kind of did the thing where you're playing for a different team every year. It wasn't
still,
like,
man.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, he was not like on the Patriots for seven of those years or something. You know, it's like,
but how long? But he was on the Patriots for multiple seasons, right?
16 through 18, so like 3 years.
Okay, yeah. So 3 years. I mean, still, yeah, for a guy that wasn't a football player first, there's still something there. So, yeah, I mean, there's always that possibility. And
he also played for the Niners, the Dolphins, the Giants, the Bills, the Panthers, the Saints, and the Jets.
Gosh, I don't remember that many teams with him. But
yeah, I don't know that he necessarily was on the field for all of them.
Right, he's probably in camp with some of them or, you know. And again, sometimes it just takes a few years and that's all you get. But that's probably, you know, some careers take pivots all the time in sports and in life. And then you realize, oh, wow, this is a way better opportunity. I love this. I mean, The Rock wanted to play the NFL. He wasn't good. He's had a pretty damn good career doing over multiple scales of different things. You know, it's an extreme example, but, like, it's true. It happens all the time. So there's always a chance that this team finds another player where you go, who the hell is that? Oh, wow. Like, there will be a preseason hero. We're all ready for that, right? Again, long way away, but you might start hearing about it in mini camps or whoever. There will be a preseason hero.
You kind of Bill last year.
Yeah, it became Bill, but, you know, it's funny because, yeah, he was a seventh-round pick, but he didn't play at all that previous year, so you kind of wonder if we, like, I guess we count it, but at the same time, he was somebody that was regarded as could have been better had he played that last year in college. I mean, who knows? I honestly don't know. You know, is Andre Carter the second? That's Andre Carter's son, right? Oh, he's on the Commanders roster. I know, we're going deep here now. But I'm just wondering, are the genetics there from the original Andre Carter? Because he's the linebacker out of Army that was an undrafted free agent. But no, he's been around the league for a while. So I'm just saying, like, we may not even know this yet, but there will be a preseason hero at some point for this team. And that's what makes it fun, right? There's always somebody that because Marcus Mason for years, the running back that did make the active roster a little bit. I'm going way back. If you remember Marcus Mason, and I think Justin Skaggs, who I think unfortunately passed away, wide receiver. If you remember that name too, guy was always great in preseason. I think he may have made the active roster briefly for them too, but sometimes you just have those guys that they show up in preseason and you go, where did this guy come from? There's always a chance. And who knows, Kane Medrano has a better season next year. So like that's just why I'm saying, like, if you look at where you think there might still be gaps on this team.
Also, apparently the Carters are not related.
Okay, so it's just Andre Carter II, but not Andre Carter related Andre Carter who played.
Yeah, it's a little tough to find. Neither of their Wikipedias refer to the other one, which you would think they would at least do that. Right. And then Google's saying no also, but I don't always trust Google, so, but nothing else. True. If their Wikipedias don't say it like in their personal life or whatever, like, hey, this guy happens to be related to someone else, they almost always will say that
on Wikipedia.
It's
usually the case, right? I mean, he's 26, so I wasn't... Honestly, I was just literally looking at far down their depth chart at names that maybe could be, you know, out of the blue.
I mean, there's like Marvin Harrison Jr. and like I mean, I get it. Like,
I will tell you a funny story about Andre Carter though. I'll never forget this. So when he was on the Redskins at the time, this is before he went to the Patriots. They brought him in from San Francisco, and I was still on like the. This is back when it was ESPN 980. Back in the day, our other sister station, Team 980, I was still in college, and I was working on the promotions team at the time for them. And it was, I want to say it was training camp, however many years ago that was. And I literally just in the bathroom in Ashburn at then Redskins Park, and who walks into the urinal next to me is Andre Carter, big-ass Andre Carter, who was built like a freaking tank. I mean, he was a monster. Nicest dude ever. Just starts a conversation with me at the urinal, just sitting there, just doing my thing. He just walks up. What's up, man? Hey, you start talking. I'm some 19-year-old kid just going, this is freaking Andre Carter talking to me. Like, that was my experience with Andre Carter. A little weird, but very funny, and I'll never forget that day. I'm like, he didn't have to talk to me, and he just sits there talking to me. We're both just, Judd described this as best I can here. This isn't a podcast. You know what's going on there, and it's just, yeah, that's how the conversation went. So, good dude. That's why when I saw that Andre Carter, I thought about that. But Andre Carter II, not related to the Andre Carter.
Also not related to Andre 3000.
No, not Andre 3000.
Who also has a number in his name.
No, he's just Andre 2, not Andre 3000. There's a big difference.
2,998 away.
There, good math, by the way. Good math. I know it's not that hard, but, you know, you still did well with that. So, anyway, we got a long way to kind of figure out if there is, but there will be a preseason hero to different degrees, but, you know. There's always going to be somebody. Maybe DJ Davidson, the undrafted, the unrestricted free agent they signed from the Giants. That could be it. I don't know. I'm just throwing names out here. Who knows who could be that guy in training camp? So Nick Cashew on the Fan. You know, it's not just the fact that Sonny Styles fell to the Commanders at 7 and surprised a lot of people. It's also that this offseason for the Commanders, as we go forward, is now about football. Nick Cashew on the Fan. It's all football for this team right now. It's not drama. It's not contract negotiations. And those are going to happen, right? They do. The Terry McLaurin thing was bound to happen, but I will still maintain that had they not won 12 games the previous season, they're just going to trade him. They would have. They would not have gone through that contract negotiation because they were trying to win now and rebuild all at the same time. You just can't do that. You got to figure out what your identity is. Yeah, they know what it is now, but they didn't know at the time. They thought they could thread the needle and rebuild a roster that still had turnover from 2024 and then also pay your 30-year-old wide receiver and hope everybody stayed healthy and none of that worked out. But, you know, that aside, if you look at where we are now, the NFC East is full of questions and drama and off-season stuff and off-the-field stuff for teams that, I mean, it's all over the place. The Commanders are not in that category at all. It's a weird, like, let's take a deep breath and go, wow, this is different for a change, right? Now, that doesn't mean it's not going to last, and it doesn't mean you don't have contract negotiations that go south or are frustrating, and you're involved with money. This is how it goes, right? But every question surrounding the Commanders right now is based on position battles, players' health, whether your coordinators that are rookies in those positions, offensive and defensive, can lead an offense and lead a defense, what their system's going to look like, who fits where, whatever. It's all football related. Let's look at the Cowboys. I know George Pickens signed his franchise tag tenure. Tender. I was going to say tenure. Tender. But that doesn't mean he's going to sit around and be like, yeah, this is cool. Because you know George Pickens already. We know he's a disruptor. He had a great season last year. I mean, he's a talented wide receiver and fits really well in the Cowboys' offense. I hate to say it, but he does. But at the same time, he wants a long-term deal. We all know Jerry's going to take his time with his negotiations. You know, it's a process. And then they're talking about wanting to get to know him. There's a newness that's there from Stephen Jones talking about that. They're not going to pay George Pickens. So what's going to happen when he's not getting targets halfway through the season? He's on a one-year deal, and he knows that the big money, if he's going to get paid that big money, comes from 93 catches and 1,400 yards and 9 touchdowns again. So that's going to be a disruptor. So you know the Cowboys have that now and into the future. It's going to be a question in camp. It's going to be a question this offseason. Players don't sign franchise tags to hope to be on a one-year deal. They sign those because they hope then to negotiate a long-term deal. And if the Cowboys aren't going to do it, and he has said he wants to either be traded or a long-term deal, that's going to be a thing in Dallas. So let's check the box for drama in Dallas. You got that. Now let's go to the Giants. It's weird, it's different, but the Giants are still in that spot too where there's a lot of stuff that's beyond just football questions, right? It's not just, will Jackson Dart learn to slide? That's a whole separate thing for them. It's John Harbaugh coming in, and as I've described it, is the guy in his first day in jail, and he's punching the big guy in the face and says, I'm captain now. John Harbaugh has made a statement. I knew it. I knew Dexter Lawrence was going to get traded. The minute those trade rumors or the trade request reports came out, because John Harbaugh wanted to make a point. That's exactly what he did. He's like, okay, Bengals are going to offer us the 10th overall pick. We're going to do that now. Instead of paying this guy big money who came off the worst year of his career, we draft somebody else to replace him. We build up our team through young rookie contracts, two first-round picks. I mean, I would have done the same thing. But now you have Kayvon Thibodeau also acting all cryptic and emo on social media and putting stuff about bye and all that. You know, it's how everybody operates now. What was on his Instagram story? Ooh, what did he say? That's how you know that's going to be a thing. So let's check that box there where you've got Kayvon Thibodeau at least. And John Harbaugh in general just, you know, wants to be the iron fist that's going to control everything and set the tone, which you kind of have to. He's got to go in and set the tone for this team. And the only way you do that is you make a point. Show guys don't want to be there. We don't want you here either. I bet you Kayvon Thibodeau probably gets traded before the season starts too. And then there's the Eagles. Ooh, yeah. Boy, the Eagles are in their own position, aren't they? Now, yeah, you got a little bit of leeway because you won a Super Bowl a couple of years ago, but the Jalen Hurts thing is not going away. A.J. Brown's going to be resolved. He'll get traded on June 1st or shortly after, probably to the Patriots. The question is how much, what they get. But you've got the Jalen Hurts situation where the team leaks that out. Oh, so a team official has said that Jalen Hurts is rigid and doesn't want to evolve with the offense, and his leadership skills were called into question. What are they doing? They're tainting the waters for two things, two reasons for this. One, it's because you now are developing scapegoat, the guy that you blame. It's Jalen Hurts. You're going to blame Jalen Hurts for when things don't go right with the offense, not the coordinators that he's constantly cycled through. It's you blame the quarterback. And then it's also on top of that, if you're trying to get a first-round pick and a top 100 pick as well for A.J. Brown, which is the rumor, you want to maximize what that return's going to be in a trade. A guy that's 29 coming off the worst year of his career, but he's a receiver, so what can you do? You can point the blame at somebody else. That assembly line of success, I'm telling you, it's every single time. Coordinator has to call great plays. Did not do that in Philadelphia. Offensive line has to protect the quarterback. Well, they did have that. They've got a good offensive line there. Quarterback's got to be able to get the football to a wide receiver. Oh, there's another problem right there. So if the Eagles blame Jalen Hurts quietly behind the scenes, leaking it out, making that a whole thing, well, then you can come back to the Patriots and go, come on, it's A.J. Brown. Look, he's not happy here. We got this quarterback thing we got to deal with. Feel sorry for us. It's tough. But we'll give you A.J. Brown. We want to give him a fresh start. He's a good guy. Fresh start somewhere else. But we're going to need a first-round pick and another top 100 pick on top of that. Oh, wait. No, I know A.J. Brown had a bad year, but it's our quarterback. Didn't you hear what happened? We don't know how that got out. We don't know how all those rumors about his leadership leaked, but that's something we have to deal with internally. But as you know, quarterback can't get a wide receiver of the football. You can't use all of that talent. I know we're trading him, but It's the quarterback's fault. That's what they're trying to do. They go out and they draft a wide receiver, get a bunch of guys in trades and free agency and all that. They're adding to that receiver room. So then they can also say on top of that, again, this is where Howie Roseman gets even more brilliant. Then they can say, well, we brought in all these other weapons. We added even more depth to wide receiver. A lot of options. If Jalen Hurts can't make that work, and A.J. Brown, it already wasn't working, we had to trade him because that didn't work. If Jalen Hurts can't make this work, well, maybe it's the quarterback. They are setting up for a Jalen Hurts divorce. It is coming. I am telling you. Meanwhile, the Commanders can just sit back and just rebuild this team, stay away from the drama. Again, there will be contract fights at some point. It's bound to happen. But they're in a much different position than where they were before. And that right there is a great sign of the future. Just for the love of God, please stay healthy this year. Nick Cashew on the Fan. This is why I hate living in the moment in baseball. I mean, we all do it to a point. We live in the moment in sports. We live in the moment with anything that's happened. Nats have lost two straight now to the Brewers. I know they played the worst team in baseball in the Mets, but as part of the stretch where they won four of their last five, but it's getting kind of excited. There was kind of thinking like, ooh, this Nats team's starting to get on the rise here. Lost two straight now. They lost to the Brewers yesterday. Got another game coming up, obviously, today with the Brewers. But look, it's a long season. I get it's 162 games. But it at least kind of felt like, and maybe we're still there. Again, 162 games. We know nothing in May when it comes to baseball. But I would just love to see the Nationals get to that point where you see the rebuild actually pay off. Right? There was a couple of years ago where that first stretch of rebuild post-World Series, you were kind of getting to that point where we went, oh, yeah, something's happening here. This is fun, spunky team. They've kind of felt like that fun, spunky team a little bit more again. But, you know, it's just been perpetual rebuild for the Nationals since, I mean, really since 2020. They had a 62-game schedule. The pandemic's going on. They just won the World Series, and you know, the rest is what it is, right? I mean, that's what it came down to. They changed the world, but it also changed things for the Nats. It sucks, but you know, when you look at that rebuild, it's just felt like it's gone on forever. And they're in a different spot from the Wizards and the Commanders. Capitals I put separate. Until Alex Ovechkin is gone, it's not a rebuild. It's just not going to be. So taking the Capitals out of this bucket, putting them in their own, the Commanders, the Wizards, you know, these are rebuilds that make you at least go, huh, all right, we got something going here. You can find justifications as to why the future could be bright, right? Now, I get it. There's plenty of things that are frustrating about Wizards, Commanders, anything. And we can all find our things. Why is Anthony Davis not played at all? Or why does he want to be here? Or is Alex Saar really going to be a guy that's an all-star one day? Or, you know, is Sonny Styles really worth the pick? It's, whatever. Again, I'm just throwing random crap at the wall right now. But you can still look at where they are and see kind of what the direction is, what the blueprint, where the GPS is taking you. It's really been nothing but up in the air for the Nationals, where guys that were the young players that they got in return for trades that were part of the rebuild, going back to the Juan Soto trade, have gotten traded. You know, it's like we're going to start the clock again. So it would just be nice to get to a point where the Nationals can actually be in a position where you see what the direction is. And that might be this season. And it may be, you know, on the level of where the Wizards are, where it's not winning a ton of games, but you see the potential. You see what the ceiling can be. You see what the growth can be. We know what James Wood can bring to this team. We know what a C.J. Abrams can bring in this team in RBI or whatever. Like, you go down that road, but you want to then start to see it all click all the way across the board. And that's, I mean, these are teams that are on different levels and different timetables for their rebuilds, but these things can turn around quick. It doesn't take necessarily 5-6 years to rebuild a team. Like, yeah, you could do what the Sixers did, and it was trust the process, but they also were drafting guys they realized didn't have a bright future. Like, if you look at this, I mean, the Sixers coming back last night and beating the Celtics, okay? Joel Embiid has been a part of, right, he's literally nicknamed the process. But let's go look at Jahlil Okafor, Michael Carter-Williams, other guys that the Sixers drafted at the beginning part of the Ben Simmons, you're right. But that wasn't the Sam Hinkie part, but it was still, yes, it was part of the absolute trust the process rebuild for them as well. Well, here's the one thing, though, I will say, Metal Chris. Ben Simmons actually did earn a second big contract. He, early on in his NBA career, he looked like he wanted to play basketball. It's just not anymore.
Yeah.
He just doesn't want to anymore. But they realized there was a lot of, like, sell high type trades for a Michael Carter Williams after what, a year? I think they traded him after his rookie year, and he won rookie of the year, if I remember correctly. It was shortly after. He was not there very long. Jahlil Okafor out of Duke was another. And again, there's plenty of other names you can throw around, but you don't always get this thing right. And oh, I mean, it's as long as the arrow is pointing up, fans buy in. Really, I believe that. DC sports fans, we see, like, here's the thing. We are seeing this excitement around the Wizards right now, and we can get that excitement around the Nats again when you start to really see that direction. I like, you know, the whole thing with Joel Embiid and wanting fans to show up and for Sixers games against the Knicks and not letting it be a bunch of Knicks fans at their arena, and that's different. That's the playoffs. But if you're talking about just a young team that's up and coming, and you want to see that fan support. If you see another team that's just a complete and utter disaster and people don't show up, well, don't be a disaster. So, like, it's the only way that you can really hold ownership in sports accountable is by not showing up and giving them your money, right? You hit them in the wallet. Don't show up. Let other fans from other teams show up at the stadium, show up at the arena, whatever the case is. Whenever you're doing anything like that, that's one of the only ways you can make a statement. And even then, there's only so much, because if you're still getting a lot of people to show up and the money's coming in and you got all the concession prices and all those things, you're still in the black. It's pretty damn good, you know? And it's kind of hard to screw up owning a major sports franchise in this country. They are an appreciating asset like real estate, and it's one of the only things left, right? I mean, really. Dan Snyder was pretty much bad at everything in business other than Snyder Communications, and that's what he made his money on, and even that was starting to go downhill. If you go back and look at the history, everything else he touched, he failed. But yet he still made billions on the Redskins because it's owning a football team. And you just, you can't really screw it up. So in the end, if you're an owner or a minority owner, even whatever the case is, and the organization's terrible and it's dysfunctional, but you're still making money, a lot of these owners will just kick back and go, yeah, I don't really care. There are owners out there that don't care about your experience as a fan. They don't care about where the money's coming from. They don't care about what the team's record is. They may say it publicly, but their real inside thought that they don't say outside is, yeah, I'm making a lot of money. I don't really care. I don't care about this team. I'm not a fan of it. Really, the only people that are truly loyal are fans. You. You are the only where the loyalty truly sits in sports. That's it. Everybody else, it's business more than anything. So when fans don't show up because the team has no direction, it's one thing. But when the team is rebuilding, you understand what the direction is. Fans buy in. And we're starting to see that more and more. Nick Ashew on the Fan.